What's this all about?
Blog Talk Radio.
About an hour and a half. Good evening. Good evening. Come in. No E.G. Marshall am I. No way. Welcome to Erie House Radio. This is Dale Kay, hailing from Spook Show. I am in accompaniment with
Dave Binkley from Weirdness Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One, and we're still hacking away at it tonight.
Yeah. We are chopping up some good stories for you. Johnny Dollar and the Whistler, as we continue our tribute to axes and hatchets and other implements of fun and dismemberment.
That's right. I have a couple more stories from Lizzie Borden, but I think we're going to save those for next year. That
yeah.
will be their 130th anniversary of the Lizzie Borden murder.
Yeah.
My, how time flies when you're having fun, you know?
Mm-hmm. I should have baked her a cake. Well, it was fun because the shows cast some doubt on her culpability. Granted, they're just dramas, but no one's ever going to really know, I don't think. Lizzie knows.
Yep, it's,
Lizzie knows.
It's part of the thing about those trials of the century. You never really know because it seems like nearly all of those, it's focused on one person, and it just doesn't always give me the full answer because they didn't look at everything.
Yep. Yeah, we got a couple people in the chat here. He's good, he's old, and he's Bob. Good old Bob, and he's Ghoul, he's Gar. Welcome. He's getting all caked up and painted up for tonight's show on Horrible Horror Stunning Gar the Ghoul immediately after this broadcast. If you're listening
live. That's
right.
It gives him an excuse to cut on Saturday night. I mean, that's why he's not here on Saturday nights.
He's never all here. Yes, he is. Anywho. We got some nice art for you in the slideshow and in our ads. So when I started thinking of hatchets and axes, I started thinking of the fine artwork of Frank Frazetta and his fantasy art as one character of the Death Dealer, which is not pictured tonight. Always had this rather large battle axe, and of course you got Conan fighting the two frost giants in our ad. And I think in the slideshow I've got a little guy with a hatchet coming at you.
Yeah,
I made some
fantasy art too. Actually, it wasn't intended to be fantasy art. I just tried to make some drawings, and somebody thought it was some kind of fantasy or something. So that's why I took it as fantasy art.
Yes, and I'm sorry, Gar. We do not have hatchet juggling. The guy made a mistake just once, and
he's called one-armed Larry is what he's called now. Yeah,
we're not sure what happened to him. I don't know. I'm stumped. Yeah, so is he. That's terrible, 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 and a terrible way to die, or and a great way to get rid of evidence, depending on how you look at it. So tonight's show, I think, are going to involve those implements of mass destruction.
Yeah, that's true. And probably a great place to start might be your Whistler. It was on it kind of preceded the Johnny Dollar. But yeah, the Whistler always has interesting tales because at the very end, he does a quick turn and twist, very much like Rod tried to do on Twilight Zones. So it was, I think that's one of the reasons I really like the Whistler stories.
Yeah, even the ones that weren't per se horror were horrifying. They were good murder tales.
Well, and they're creepy because they have some guy looking over your shoulder the whole time, stalking you. And,
yes.
And actually, it's probably when The Shadow first came out, the Shadow was not part of the story. So the Shadow was probably presented the way that the Whistler became, because the Shadow was on for a short time where he was just kind of like a narrator of the story.
Yeah.
He went off the air and he came back as a character from the, you know, of the story. So the Whistler really kind of takes its roots back to the Shadow itself.
Yeah. I think the only time you see the Whistler is in, no, that's not the Whistler. That's the Mysterious Traveler. No, you never see the Whistler. So there you go.
You
We're
see
not
the,
seeing him tonight.
And yeah, in the movies or in the TV show, all you ever saw of him was his shadow. You saw the Whistler's shadow.
Ooh.
And you heard his, you heard his whistle, you heard his voice, and you saw his shadow.
Yeah. And they picked a great voice for him as well. This episode is called The Killers. And we can get started. What do we have for a broadcast date for The Killers?
It's May Day, May 1st, 1943.
According to...
Have you heard the strange tales of the Whistler?
What you've done. You're trying to run away, but I'm going with you.
Saturday night, and CBS presents The Whistler. I, the Whistler, know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales, many secrets hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. And so I tell you tonight the story of The Killers. The rain beats down in torrents, and during the brief flashes of lightning, a certain stone building stands out in the darkness of the night, the courthouse of a county in a southwestern state. A murder trial has come to a conclusion. A sensational trial in which the young killer has been tried and convicted of the brutal slaying of five people, his employer, Farmer Atkins, and Atkins' entire family. The defense, appointed by the state, contended that the slayer was insane. Now the killer stands before the judge.
The jury has found that on the night of September 13th, the entire Atkins family was brutally slain with a meat cleaver wielded by the defendant, Joe Nichols. In the absence of sufficient motive other than the $20 found on the defendant was placed under observation by the state psychiatrists. And the said state psychiatrists find the defendant suffering from dementia praecox. Therefore, it is the duty of this court to commit the defendant to the state institution for the insane.
And so, Joe Nichols was taken to the state asylum, there to be placed under observation and treatment. Now let us travel south in the same state to a certain farm, a farm belonging to the widow Agatha Mayberry. There's no connection whatever between Agatha Mayberry and the insane killer, Joe Nichols, but let us go to the farm anyway. Agatha's husband died 3 years ago and left her with a rather large farm. At first she managed things very well, but then came the war, and hands became scarcer and scarcer. Then Agatha's sister Ellen came to live with her, and Ellen's daughter, a lazy girl named Della.
Storm is coming up stronger now. Did you get those calves in like I told you, Della?
What did you say, Aunt Agatha?
Get your nose out of that magazine and you could hear me. Aunt Agatha wanted to know if you looked after the calves, darling.
No. No, I forgot.
You'll have to excuse Della. She just can't get used to this sort of life in so short a time. You've both been here almost a year.
Give her time, Agatha.
Give her time. I'll give her time. Get out there, Della, and see if those calves are under shelter.
I might catch my death of cold in this storm.
Those calves are worth more than you are. Go on.
lightning, Agatha.
I don't think she's frightened of anything.
Why don't you hire a man to do these things?
Wish I could. Men are scarce these days, all in the army.
Oh, poor baby. Poor baby. You stay here. I'll go and see to the calves.
You'll do no such thing, Ellen. Stay here and take care of your baby. And I'll attend to the calves.
Well, she'll be all right just as soon as the storm's over.
Yeah. Well, you've got to do something around here, Della. At least you can wash the dishes.
But I dried them yesterday.
Don't hurt your beautiful hands. Anyway, I've got to do something around here under these conditions.
You need a man. You need a farmhand.
Yes, but I can't get one. So the only thing I can do is to get rid of some of this land. Sell it to someone who can handle it.
Well, Mr. Dalton made you an offer for part of it, Agatha. He offered to buy some.
Yes, I know. And he can handle it. Has a couple of sons. And a daughter who isn't afraid to get her hands dirty.
So, how much do you think he'd pay for it?
Oh, I don't know. But I'm going to find out.
Agatha, where are you going?
I'm going to see Mr. Dalton, my neighbor. If I can make a deal, I'll make it tonight.
But it's storming, Aunt Agatha.
I've been in storms before. I'll drive over there and be back in an hour. I'm not a sissy. Go on to bed, Della, and pull the covers over your head.
Aunt Agatha's selfish. She's mean. All she thinks about is this farm and work, work. I don't know anything about a farm. I can't learn. I won't.
Well, you don't belong on a farm, Della. Doesn't suit you.
I won't herd animals. I won't milk cows.
Oh, there, darling. Don't cry. Mother understands.
No one understands me. I won't be a slave. And Agatha's trying to make a slave of me. There are people for such work. There are men for such things. Well,
but men are scared, darling. Men are scared.
Then we'll leave. We won't put up with this.
Well, how can we leave, baby? We have no money.
No. Well, I won't take care of animals. I'm going to be a model. I should be in New York or in Hollywood.
Now, darling, don't let yourself get excited.
She's mean and selfish.
I hate her. Please, Della, darling, calm yourself.
Who does she think she is, ordering me around like a slave? I won't stand for it. Miserly old fool, I hate her.
You don't mean a word you say, darling. You're just upset now. Please try and relax. Please. No.
Well, Della, poor little Della, sobs and sobs in a fit of hysteria. Aunt Agatha drives on through the raging storm, and 10 minutes later pulls to a stop in front of her nearest neighbor's house, the house of Farmer Dalton.
Anybody home? Dalton.
Well, the land of mercy, Agatha Mayberry. Well, come on in, come in, come in, come in.
You must think I'm kind of crazy running around on a night like this, Mr. Dalton.
Well, there must be a reason for it, Agatha.
Yes, there is. I want to talk business.
Business? Well, all right. What's on your mind all of a sudden?
You want to buy the east half of the farm?
Why, sure. I told you I did.
What was your offer?
$2,000.
Well, that's a little low, don't you think?
Well, perhaps, but what are you going to be able to do with it? You ain't got no men folk around. You'll have to let it go to grass.
Yes, I know that. But if we could only get a few women to give up their fancy manicures and long fingernails, it wouldn't hurt them any, I know. I've tried it.
Yeah, you're right about that, Agatha.
Well, let's get down to business. You'll give me $2,000 for the east half of my land?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, it's a deal.
Good. Shake. Now, how do you want it?
Well, how are you prepared to handle it?
Well, I'll tell you, I collected $1,000 cash from Henry Jacobs late this afternoon. It's too late to put in the bank. So, I'll just give you that cash and a note for 12 months on the balance.
All right, fair enough. Make out the note.
All right. I, John Dalton, in consideration, in the sum of $1,000. There you are, Agatha.
I see. Well, shouldn't we have a witness to this transaction?
If you want it that way, sure.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just wanted to thank you, Mr. Dalton. That was a swell supper.
Oh, come in here a minute. I want you to do something.
Sure. Anything you say, Mr. Dalton. What can I do?
Joe, this is Mrs. Agatha Mayberry, my neighbor of the West. She just sold me the east half of her land. I'm paying her half cash and the other half on a 12-month note. Like you to witness that note, would, Joe?
Is that necessary?
Oh, I don't know, but that's the way Agatha wants it.
Very well, I'll witness it. There you are.
Oh, thanks, Joe.
And who is this man?
Well, Joe came here today, early this morning, and he's worked like a dog all day, done 10 men's work, and that's something I can't understand.
What do you mean?
Well, he's been discharged from the Army because of a physical reason. He's a 4F, but certainly didn't show any bad signs today.
I can still do a lot of useful things.
I thought you had enough men around here to handle things.
Oh, I have, but he was broke and hungry.
Well, if you don't really need him, how about lending him to me? I could use him.
Yes, that's right. You could. She's got a farm and not a man on the place, Joe. How about it, huh?
Sure. Sure, I'd be glad to help her.
Fine. Well, you go on with Mrs. Mayberry. She really needs help, Joe. She lives alone with her sister and her young niece, and they can't help her much, but you can.
It's a deal.
Right.
Well, here's your $1,000 cash, Agatha, and the note. Next payment's due in 30 days. I'll have it there.
I'm not worried about you, John. See you later.
Well, now, you better keep an eye on me. I'm a strange sort of critter. I forget sometimes, you know.
Well, come along, young man. It's getting late. The storm's getting worse.
Yes, yes, I know. Are you alone?
Yes.
Good night, Mr. Dalton, and thanks for everything.
Night, Joe.
What did you say your name was?
I didn't say. But my name's Joe.
Oh, I see. Ever do any farm work, Joe?
Yes, I've done a little, here and there.
Well, you're sure welcome.
Why did you sell half of your farm?
Because I couldn't take care of it.
You sold it short, didn't you?
Yep, $2,000. And it's really worth $4,000. You gave me $1,000 cash and this note for the balance.
Aren't you worried about carrying $1,000 in cash?
No, why should I be worried?
Oh, I don't know, but it's kind of risky.
Is it?
Aren't you afraid of me?
No, I'm not afraid of anyone.
No? Well, that's good.
How long have you been out of the Army?
3 days, over 4 months. I was wounded in Bataan. But I can do lots of things, even if I am discharged.
Well, I'm glad to have you. Glad to have anyone who can do anything.
It's a dark road, isn't it?
Yep. No one could drive on it if they didn't know it.
Any crossroads?
Nope, none.
How much farther is your place?
About 2 miles.
Oh, that far, huh? It's a big farm.
What do you think of that? Must have got wet after all.
Mm, that's what it sounds like.
Oh, I hope it keeps going. I'd hate to have to walk the rest of the way in this storm. Such mud.
Yeah, that wouldn't be good, would it? Maybe you'd better stop and let me have a look under the hood.
All right. Shall I turn off the motor?
No, not yet.
Oh, your fan isn't working. The belt's slipping and your motor's too hot.
Well, can you fix it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can fix it. Have you got a wrench?
Yes, in that door pocket.
Oh, yes. Hey, here we are. This'll do it. Turn it off.
Well, what are you staring at?
Oh, I was just thinking what a brave woman you are to be riding around alone on a night like this with $1,000 in cash.
Seems to me Agatha's been gone quite a while, Della.
Yes, been almost an hour. Maybe she got stuck or something happened to the car.
She'll be right if it did. I don't care if she never comes back.
Yeah.
What do you say? You don't mean that.
Well, maybe not. But I was just thinking.
So were you, but you won't admit it.
Admit what?
If she didn't come back, why? Well, then we could leave here. We could go to New York or Hollywood and I could follow my career.
How?
Well, we could sell the farm and everything. Have plenty of money to live on till I got started.
We sell the farm?
Don't be so dumb, Mother. Wouldn't you inherit all her property?
Oh, don't talk like that, Della. It frightens me.
I can imagine how frightened you are. You're not afraid something has happened to her. You're afraid something won't.
Be still.
All right.
It's getting worse.
Yes. That's gonna make the road slicker, muddier. Be hard to keep from skidding.
Della, don't open it.
Who's there?
It's all right. Open the door.
Good news, maybe, Mother.
What is it?
Oh, gee, it's mighty wet out here. Are you Mrs. Mayberry's niece?
Yes. What happened?
Well, she had a little trouble and...
Where is she? Is she all right? I'm her sister.
No, don't close the door. She'll be along in a moment.
Is she... How did it happen?
Well, the fan belt slipped and the motor got hot. And then when she started down that steep hill, the car started to slide and she went into a tree at the bottom.
I see. Where is she now?
Well, I got to the garage all right. Not hurt much from axle bent a little.
Agatha! What? She's all right.
Yeah, but I certainly had a time with that car. What do you mean, all right? Of course I'm all right.
But we thought...
Make some tea, Ellen. I'm frozen stiff.
Who's this man?
Oh, this is Joe. Joe, this is my niece Della, and this is her mother, my sister Ellen.
We've met.
We're going to have a man around here. Joe's a new hand. Maybe we'll get something done around here for a change.
Did you make the deal with Mr. Dalton?
Sure. And he paid me $1,000 down in cash. Balance monthly. Joe here was witness to the deal.
Witness?
Yes, I happened to be at the Dalton's place. I worked there today. Your aunt said she needed a hand, so here I am.
You're going to stay here?
Of course.
Well, how nice.
Your aunt's a very brave woman to take a chance riding with a stranger and $1,000 cash around her neck.
Oh, I'm not afraid. I'm a pretty good judge of people. Well, since you aren't going to make that tea, Ellen, I'll do it myself. Sit down, Ellen, before you fall down. Turn on the radio, Della. I want to hear the news in a little bit.
Are you married, Mr. Joe?
No.
You're not in the Army?
I was. Medical discharge.
You look tired, sir.
Yes, I am. I wonder if you'd mind if I'd turn in.
Not at all.
Well, is there a separate building for the hands?
No, I suppose Aunt Agatha intends for you to have a spare room upstairs. The end of the hall.
I see. Well, good night, Miss...
My name is Della.
Good night, Della.
Good night, Joe.
Good night.
Night, ma'am.
He's a bit odd, isn't he?
I like him. He's not bad looking, either.
The farmer and his entire family with a meat cleaver. He was later found to be insane and sentenced to the insane asylum. He escaped last night and is believed to be heading south. This man is dangerous, regardless of his seeming sanity, and authorities are to be notified of any man answering his description. He is 5'9", dark brown hair, blue eyes, and his name is Joe Nichols. He was last seen...
Della, it's him, and his name is Joe.
Uh-oh. This guy's a little kooky, maybe.
Or is this a case of mistaken radio announcer identity?
One never knows. One never knows. But we'll find out.
It happens
out
a lot in radio.
Later. Yep, we'll find out when we conclude this.
Yeah, it's true. We will have that. Hey, CW joined us here tonight. I know Fogsbane is stuck at somebody's wedding. And so we will forge along. I know, I'm sure he will catch along as we... gets as he breaks free tonight to maybe even while he's there, he'll put it on and pretend like he's listening to a ball game. But yes, he'll be listening to Erie House Radio,
which is even better, especially lately.
especially lately, yes.
Don't even get me started. But
just trying to put you on your guardian, Dale. You know.
Oh, I just threw up in my mouth a little bit.
You know, I know it's off subject, but I don't know if they're going to be able to name it that because there is a roller derby guardians team out there, and they already have the name trademarked. So I'm not sure that they'll be able to become that. So after all this time, they've taken like 3 years, 3.5 years to come up with this name, and there's another team that in Cleveland that already has it, albeit a roller derby, but still, it already has it trademarked. So
yeah, well, good luck in their defense, sort of, they had to have a few extra years to sell the cheap Wahoo stuff, you know, that offensive stuff. They had to hurry up and sell some more of it, you know, while limited supplies last. You know what I'm saying?
You mean like the limited supplies they're manufacturing right now? Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Come on. Fool no one.
Boy, we got a lot of radio tonight.
Yes, we do. Back on track, hey? Is that what you're saying? Fine.
Something like that. Oh, yeah.
Fine. I'll even pay attention as we continue with...
Why start now?
Yeah. Let's continue with the Whistler and part two, because I want to find out if this guy's really the kook or not. Let's wrap it up, and we'll be back after this.
Yes, Stella. His name is Joe. Upstairs in that spare room is Joe, a mad killer. That frightens you, doesn't it? You and your mother and your aunt, three women alone in a house with a madman. And the man knows about the $1,000. What are you going to do, Della?
What are we going to do, Della? What do we do? Quiet, Mother. I'll tell Agatha. Agatha should know.
Come back here. Be quiet.
Agatha should be warned. Maybe she'll know what to do.
No, not a word to Aunt Agatha. It would only frighten her.
Then call the police. Call somebody.
We can't. The phone isn't working. It's gone dead.
Gone dead? Del, what do you mean?
What I said. I tried it earlier this evening.
Well, when? I don't remember.
You be still. Now go upstairs and go to bed.
Go upstairs? What? No, Del, I can't. We've
got to tell Agatha. Go to bed.
But what if he should... Della, he knows about that money. Might kill us all for free.
There's a gun in this table drawer. I can see both your room and Aunt Agatha's from this chair by the door. I'll stay here in the dark until morning. Understand?
Yes, but please.
Go on upstairs before Agatha sees you. Go on.
Well, where's everybody? Where's Joe?
Said he was tired, so he went to bed. Mother just went up. After all, it is late, Aunt Agatha.
Yeah, right, it is.
You look tired, Aunt. Perhaps you'd better...
What's the matter with you? What are you trembling about?
Trembling? I think I've taken cold. A little chill. I'll be off.
Better take some quinine and go to bed yourself.
Yes, but I haven't been sleeping well lately. I'll read for a little while. And I'll be off.
I missed the news. What did it say?
It said that, nothing's important.
Oh, I see. Well, better drink some warm milk and go to bed. Night.
Good night.
Why didn't you tell her, Della? Do you really think you can handle the situation? You think you can cope with a madman? Your face grows more pale. Your hands tremble. Della steps to the table. Studies the phone, then opens the drawer, takes the revolver, turns out the light, and slips into the chair by the door. As the hours pass, the storm increases to a fury. It is 3 a.m. now, and Agatha sleeps soundly in her four-poster bed. Then her door opens softly, and a tall figure steps into the room, slips to the side of Agatha's bed. A few moments pass, then a hand reaches toward Agatha's throat, removes the money bag. Agatha opens her eyes.
What do you want? What is it you...
The storm has reached its peak. A few minutes later, it has passed over, leaving only the fall of a light rain. Suddenly, Della stirs in the chair beside the door. Figure is slowly, stealthily coming down the stairs. Reaches the bottom and starts to cross the room toward Della. She wakes breathlessly, then snaps on the light.
Where were you going?
Why, I was there. What are you doing down here?
Where were you going?
Well, the storm woke me up and I got a little hungry. I thought I'd have a look in the kitchen.
You were headed the wrong way, Joe.
Huh?
The kitchen is over there.
Oh, yeah. Yes, sure. I guess I got turned around in the dark.
I don't think you were confused, Joe.
What do you mean?
You had no intention of spending the night here. And you weren't planning to start work in the morning.
Of course I was.
I know who you are, Joe. I know all about you.
What? How do you know?
Radio. There was a warning on the description. They said you were in this place.
And what are you going to do? Phone the police?
No. Phone's dead.
Yeah?
I'm not afraid of you. I understand your calm.
What do you mean by that?
I don't condemn. I sympathize.
You do?
Yes.
If they know I'm in the vicinity, then I've got to get out of here.
You've got a little money, haven't you, Joe?
Yes.
Then I'm going with you.
Well, you're going... What do you mean? I can't do that.
Yes, you can. You've got to. Once we're across the state line, everything will be all right.
State line? I don't get it.
I've got to get away from here. I've got to. I'm being held here against my wishes.
Held here?
Yes, they think I'm crazy, unbalanced.
Crazy? You don't act crazy to me.
Neither do you. But they've got some reason for keeping me here, and I can't stand it any longer. I have left before, but I haven't got a cent, and they watch me like a hawk. Here are the keys to the car.
I don't need a car. I can hide out better on foot. I don't want anybody with me, especially a girl. And besides, I don't intend to cross the state line.
But you're taking me with you.
Nothing doing. I'm getting out now while it's dark.
Wait a minute.
What?
Shoot if I can. Open that door and go to the garage. Now go on. Remember, you're a fugitive. If I shoot you, they'll think nothing of it. Straight ahead to the garage. This is the main highway.
Well, why the main highway? I'd rather keep to the side.
I wouldn't. Straight ahead.
Maybe they're right. Maybe you are nuts.
Oh, are you crazy, Joe?
Certainly not.
Of course not. Neither am I.
Where does this highway go?
To the state line.
Look, I'm in a tough enough spot as it is. I'm not going to try and cross the state line with a girl at this time of the morning.
I'll take care of that. I know. Straight ahead.
I could wring your neck for this.
You're just the one who could do it.
I've got one chance in 1,000 of getting over that line.
We'll make it all right. We'll make it. And keep both hands on that wheel. I know what you're thinking.
I could turn this car over, you know.
But you won't. Will you?
You. Hey, look. Red lights ahead.
Yes, the state line.
One of the lights is swinging. They're signaling to stop. Police officers.
Yes. Faster, Joe, faster. Go right on through them. They'll never catch you. I said faster.
Now I am stuck.
Don't move, Joe. Stay right where you are.
You little sap.
Don't you move or I'll shoot.
Put up your hands, buddy. What have you been drinking?
All right.
What's the idea of running over the state line like that? Didn't you see the lights?
Well, you see, I...
Maybe he's colorblind, Tom. Thought they were green.
He seems to be sober, all right. Let's see your driver's license.
I haven't got one.
Let's see your draft card.
I haven't got one. That is... with me.
Well, hear that, Frank? Who are you?
Hey, Tom, look, slumped down in the seat.
The girl. Throw your light on her.
Look at her face, all bloody.
Open the door. She's been bashed in the mouth. Wait a minute. Is this your gun, buddy?
No.
What's this little pouch on the seat?
I don't know.
Look, Tom, look at the bills. Look at the wad of money.
Hey, sister, are you all right?
All right, sister, we're state police.
Police?
What happened to you?
It's him.
Who? Who is this man?
He came to our farm last night. He robbed my aunt and made me come with him. He kidnapped me.
She's crazy. She's a nut.
When we crossed the line, I tried to scream and he hit me.
You don't know who he is?
No. No, his name is Joe. I think he's the lunatic who escaped from the asylum yesterday.
She's crazy, I tell you.
Get out of that car, buddy. You're coming to headquarters. Come on, miss. What happened then?
Well, after Mother and I heard the announcement on the radio, I knew it was him. I couldn't call the police because the phone was dead.
Why didn't you go for help?
Because he knew that Aunt Agatha had the money. I was afraid to go because of what he might do. I got Aunt's gun and sat by the door where I could see him if he went into his room.
Yes?
But I must have fallen asleep because I waked up just in time to see him coming down the stairs and stop by the outer door. I turned on the light and he said he was... looking for the kitchen.
It was then you realized that while you'd been asleep that he'd gone into your aunt's room, killed her, and taken the money?
Yes. If I hadn't fallen asleep, I might have prevented it. I could have shot him.
Officer, you know this woman's crazy, don't you?
Crazy?
Yes. Yes, she told me so herself. She said she was being kept a prisoner by her aunt and her mother because they knew she was unbalanced.
Yeah. Well, maybe you're right, Joe. Maybe she is crazy.
What do you mean by that?
She's crazy. Yeah. Crazy like a fox.
She's lying. I never said I was crazy.
When Joe came to the farm and you realized he was the escaped killer from the asylum, you decided to take advantage of his being there and kill your aunt so your mother would inherit the estate.
How can you say such a thing? That's horrible.
You knew Joe would try to make a getaway when you told him about the broadcast. You had the money and the gun. You forced him to take you across the state line. You knew we'd chase you and catch you. You dropped the money bag in the seat, and when we caught up to you, you hit yourself in the mouth with the gun butt.
I didn't.
Ah, yes, you did. We know all about it. It was you who went into your aunt's room, took the money, and hit her on the head.
How can you say that?
Because your aunt saw you standing over her bed. She called headquarters an hour ago.
You what?
Yeah. You didn't hit her hard enough, Della. And you lied about that phone. It was never out of order.
She isn't dead. Oh. But this is ridiculous. Why would I do such a thing? Here's an escaped lunatic. A mad killer. Why should I be accused of such a thing?
Della, Joe Nichols was captured a half hour after the broadcast. This man isn't Joe Nichols. He's Joe Davis, a deserter from Camp Higsby. But I think he's ready to go back and face the music.
Oh, believe me, Lieutenant. I thought I couldn't stand it there any longer. So I ran away. But after all this, well, just take me back to camp. It'll be like paradise.
Well, there you are. A strange story that might very well have ended disastrously for Joe if Della hadn't slipped up on two things. The telephone and the failure to learn if Aunt Agatha was really dead. Even though Joe has not escaped as escaped lunatic, he might very easily have been charged with murder had it not been for the over-anxiety of the vicious-minded Della. Della wasn't crazy. She was just a selfish little fool with no thought for anyone or anything except her own individual existence. There are a lot of you like that. Think it over.
What an accusation.
CBS has presented The Whistler. Original music for this production was composed and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. The Whistler is written and directed by J. Donald Wilson and originates from Columbia Square in Hollywood. Next week, same time, I, the Whistler, will return to tell you another unusual tale. Good night. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
And you're listening to Erie House Radio. That's our first story for tonight.
You know what I really missed about that the particular story, Dale, was the announcer, who is the, I don't know why, all of a sudden his name just left me. He was also the guy who was the original voice of Robbie the Robot on Forbidden Planet.
Marvin Miller. Yeah,
Marvin Miller did a lot of announcing and acting in radio, as well as doing voiceover work like he did there in Forbidden Planet.
Yep.
Great voice. Great voices so many of these radio people have. We have a special treat here, Dale.
Mm-hmm.
I went out and I went and kicked up the Erie House time machine.
Oh, goodness.
It worked. And this is kind of what happened when I kicked up the time machine there.
Well, I guess it's time to do the interview. I wonder if this time machine really works. Let me get in here and put in the seatbelt. Okay, I'll just press the button. Hey, Here we are in Fall River, Massachusetts. I do believe I see Lizzie Borden walking down the street.
3 o'clock in the morning, and it looks like it's gonna be another sleepless night.
Are you Lizzie Borden?
Hello, it's me.
Miss Borden, I'm Dave from Erie House Radio. Can you tell me what you do when you can't sleep nights and can't go out for a walk?
Counting flowers on the wall, that don't bother me at all.
Do you realize it's nearly 130 years since the murder of your father and stepmother?
Where does the time go? Must we let it end?
But we only have a short time together.
We've got tonight. Who needs tomorrow?
After all this time, do you have a confession for us?
No, you're never gonna get it. No, never ever gonna get it.
No, not this time.
No, you're never gonna get it, my love. Never ever gonna get it.
You know they say that confession is good for the soul. Are you sure you don't want to confess?
You can stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't back down.
It's been stated that you didn't like your stepmother. What did you say to her on that last day? What did you say when you saw your stepmother dead?
It may sound kind of cruel, but I've been silent too long. Thank God in Greyhound you're gone.
Your father was also murdered on that same day.
He had a bad day.
What did you think when you saw your father dead?
Happy trails to you. Lord. Until we meet again.
Did you have any other thoughts?
Then I'll be in your company.
So if you didn't do the killing, then who did?
Nobody. Nobody.
So then you believe it was a double suicide. You know, people believe that you did the killings.
Always gonna be an uphill battle. Sometimes I'm gonna have to lose.
With all of this finally over, what are your final thoughts on this whole situation?
And it's almost like a song.
Almost like a song.
But it's much too sad to write.
All right, guess that I have to get back to the station.
Thank God and Greyhound, you're gone.
This is Dave, returning you to Erie House Radio.
Wow. Bored, huh?
There you go.
Awesome. Had some time to kill, why not? Let's do
it. Oh, yeah.
Dave, that was awesome.
Spent a good part of the afternoon putting that together. It was just a thought I had to.
Well, thank you for that. That was Shades of Dickie Goodman there. Bravo.
So, there we go. Another Erie House special you're not going to find anywhere else but on the Erie House Radio, and you wouldn't want to. Okay.
And who knows? There may be more to come of that, things of that nature. We shall see.
Hey, we got the time machine. Might as well use it, right?
There you go. Kick the wheels. Make sure it can get up to 80 miles an hour. Something like that. You can even find a DeLorean anymore. We got a whole lot of radio. At least one more show.
And we do.
Who knows what other fun stuff? Because there's another celebration besides axe murdering. We'll talk about a little later on.
Yep.
As we get into this episode of Johnny Dollar.
True. This is the first full-time Johnny Dollar. Dick Powell did audition for the role. He did not take it. He auditioned for that, and he also was given a script from Blake Edwards to do a series called Richard Diamond Private Detective. He decided to go to Richard Diamond Private Detective, which is a good idea because Johnny Dollar never would have became what it did become. Edmund O'Brien came in to step in as the first full-time Johnny Dollar, and that's who we have tonight, is Mr. Edmund O'Brien.
Great, and this one is from?
From June 27th of 1951.
It's the Hatchet House Theft Matter.
From Hollywood, it's time now for Edmund O'Brien as...
Johnny Dollar.
Oh, yes. Is this Inspector Saylor, Scotland Yard?
Oh, yes, Inspector. Thanks for calling back. I understand you've been assigned to Scott Jewel Theft Investigation?
Yes. Inspector Finlay has been taken ill. I was given the case this morning. Matter of fact, I just received the file with your request to telephone.
Well, that puts us about abreast then, Inspector. I got in from the States last night. I'd like to get together with you so we could compare notes.
Yes, splendid. Could you come to my office?
At your convenience.
Well, then, why don't you come right over? But first, Mr. Dollar, tell me, did the insurance company send you to London in the belief that the yard is no longer competent?
What?
We've been reminded, you know, that our reputation has fallen off badly since the Stone of Scorn has stolen. But perhaps you and I shall have better luck, huh?
Edmund O'Brien in a transcribed adventure of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Home Office Financial Surety Company, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Hatchet House theft matter. Expense account item 1, $432.50, airfare and incidentals between Hartford and London, England. I arrived in the evening and learned by phone that the original inspector assigned to the case had been replaced. The next morning, I was in contact with his replacement, and at 10:30, I was directed to his office.
Here we are, sir. Inspector Saylor's?
Yes?
Mr. Dollar, sir.
Oh, yes. Come in, Mr. Dollar.
Thanks very much.
All right, you are, sir.
Pleasure, Mr. Dollar.
How do you do, Inspector?
Now, I, speaking to an acquaintance of yours a few moments ago, Inspector Finch?
Oh, yes. Yes, I worked on a case with him over here last year. How is he?
Quite well, thank you. He complimented you quite highly, sir.
Well, that's very nice of him. But as I remember it, I think I was more of a burden than a help to him.
Yeah, I doubt that. Well, I suppose we should face the situation at hand.
Yeah. I brought an accurate description of all the jewelry insured by Mrs. Scott.
Oh, splendid.
But the cable that reported the theft wasn't quite clear as to which pieces were missing.
Well, Inspector Finlay's information on that score is quite accurate, I think. Here we are.
Oh, thank you.
And he's covered the methods used in the commission of the crime quite thoroughly, I think. I'm going to spend the afternoon crime index. I should probably be able to link the method with a few of our known criminals.
Gentleman's investigation, huh?
I suppose so. Rather tedious, but quite often successful.
I'd like to see Mrs. Scott myself, if it's all right with you.
Oh, of course. I shall arrange a car and a driver for you. Will early afternoon be suitable?
Well, thanks, but there's no reason to go to that bother, is there? Isn't she staying here in London?
No, she left a place near Seven Oaks in Surrey, about 20 miles south of here. Quite an historic establishment, I'm told. It's called Hatchet House.
Before I left London that afternoon, Inspector Saylor's and I pulled the few facts we had. I was able to tell him that Mrs. Marcella Scott, reputedly a wealthy Texas widow, was actually slightly on her uppers as far as ready cash went. She had sold some jewelry the previous year for considerably less than its insured value. He gave me the news that Mrs. Scott frequently had been seen in the company of another American tourist named Norman King. And together, we figured the loss at slightly over $100,000. Hatchet House was a medium-sized pile of ivy-draped masonry just on the northern fringe of Seven Oaks. In addition to history, it boasted some seclusion, being set back from the road in the middle of a walled garden. Mrs. Scott was in the village, but was expected back momentarily, and would I care to come in and wait?
The library is quite comfortable, if you'd care to go in there.
In a minute, thanks. Your name is Garrett?
Yes, sir.
You've been employed here during Mrs. Scott's old stay?
Oh, yes, sir. She bought my services from the other side. I'm not without recommendations in Seven Oaks, sir.
And you must know pretty well who's been in the house at parties and so on.
I'd say so, sir. But they've all been genuine people. Class, you know. I wouldn't say that any of them would stoop to thievery.
How many other servants are there?
Two that live in. There's Millie Hankey. She's a maid. There's old Mr. Mims. He's the gardener. He's got a cottage out back.
Mrs. Scott was entertaining night before last when the jewelry was stolen. Had she hired any extra servants?
No, sir.
Oh, thanks, Garrett.
Oh, there's Millie. Millie, come here, do. Here's an American gentleman to see you.
How do you do, sir?
You're Miss Hankey?
Yes, sir.
He's come all the way from the other side, Millie, about Mrs. Scott's jewels being stolen.
It's a scandal, that's what it is. But I don't suppose you'd say it's the only one.
Watch your tongue, Millie.
Watching it.
I'll be in the pantry, sir, if I can be of any more service to you.
Thanks, Garrett. I will want the names of the people who were here the other night.
Right, sir. I'll write them on a paper.
He's got a nerve telling me to watch my tongue. A scandal's a scandal, genuine people or not, and he knows it.
Just what did you mean, Millie?
I suppose a servant's paid to keep her eyes open and her mouth closed. But I haven't been a servant long. I'm only a village girl from Penrith, but I know right from wrong.
You don't approve of some of the things?
No, I don't. And I'm going to leave when I get married. Maybe next month.
Hmm. Congratulations.
Thank you, sir. He's a good man.
I'm sure of that.
So big and strong. Lots of fun. We'll have an inn of our own someday. And I won't have to be a servant anymore.
I wish you a lot of luck.
Thank you, sir.
I want you to know, Millie, that anything you say to me will be kept in strict confidence.
Yes, sir. You look like the honest kind.
Now, what things especially didn't you approve of? Something that's caught your eye could be important.
I don't know, but one thing. Being a widow at her age, it's indecent, that's what. And I've seen them making jokes in front of the photo of her poor dead husband. He was older, you know.
Yes, I knew that.
I can't say she hastened his end, but I can't say she's sorry he's buried and gone either.
Who made jokes in front of his photograph?
Mr. King.
Norman King. He was here the night of the theft, wasn't he?
The night of the theft. He's been here more than he's elsewhere. He's a filthy leech, if you ask me. I'm only a country girl, but there's a look in his eyes I didn't mistake. Not for a moment. He's slimy.
I wish you'd think about the party night before last, Millie. You were here on the ground floor through most of it, weren't you?
Yes, sir, the whole drunken time.
I wish you'd try and remember if anybody went upstairs and stayed long enough to have gone into Mr. Scott's room and forced open the drawer and stolen the jewelry.
I'll try, sir.
Don't mistake me. We aren't sure that's what happened. It could just as well have been an outsider who knew a party was going on and had a way of entry, or even somebody passing by who found the rear door unlocked.
I'll try, sir.
Thanks, Millie. I won't keep you from your work any longer. I'll just wait in the library for Mrs. Scott. I waited an hour until the butler, Garrett, notified me that Marcella Scott had phoned. She had met some friends in the village, had driven to London with them, and wouldn't return until the next morning. I could find her any time after 9 that night at Claridge's Hotel. I spent another 20 minutes with the servants and left for London and Inspector Saylor's office.
Ah, well, I expected you to return before this, Mr. Dollar.
I hope I didn't keep the car and driver too long.
No, not at all, especially if the time was well spent.
Most of it was wasted. While I waited for Mrs. Scott in Hatchet House, she was on her way to London.
Oh? Huh? She's here now?
Claridge's. She came in with friends.
Well, doesn't seem to be upset over her loss, does she?
Nor the loss of her husband either, I take it.
Oh?
I'm interested in the association between her and this Norman King.
I see. Then you did have a talk with Miss Mildred Hankey, the maid, hmm?
Yes, I did. Why?
Did you? No. Inspector Finlay did.
What did he say about it?
Well, she suffered from an insane hate or jealousy because of this Mr. King.
I didn't see it quite that way.
That she berated the friendship shared by Mrs. Scott and him. This is what he jotted down. Investigate possibility of collusion between Hankey girl and King.
Well, as I said, I didn't see it that way, but maybe he hit something.
Perhaps.
King's from New York. I'm going to make a phone call, see what I can learn about his background. In the meantime, I hope to meet him. At least I think he's here with Mrs. Scott.
You're going to see her, then?
Her message was that I could any time after 9. I plan to be available about 2 minutes after.
I shall be interested to hear.
Did you get anything from your files?
Nothing. Dreadfully and absolutely nothing.
At 5 minutes before 9, I arrived at Mrs. Scott's hotel. On the stroke of 9, I phoned her suite, and at 3 minutes after, I met her. A striking honey blonde with tanned skin and an athletic figure that dressed her clothes nicely.
I'm sorry I missed you in the country, Mr. Dollar.
It's all right, I should have phoned.
I suppose you're here to save what money you can for the insurance company in case my things aren't recovered.
Insurance companies don't operate that way, Mrs. Scott. They can afford not to.
Please sit down.
Thank you.
It's the expected thing, I guess, but I suspect one of the servants had something to do with it.
Do you have any special reason for that suspicion?
Oh, they're strange people. I don't know anything about them. I've had them 2 months, and I've never been comfortable with them around me.
Anything else?
Well, the more I thought of it, the more it seems to make sense. The house was full of people to be suspected. One of them could have taken advantage of that.
The men at Scotland Yard say that it took between 15 and 20 minutes to force that drawer open the way it was done. Did you miss either of your servants for that length of time?
Not that I remember. It got a little confused by 11 or so. Mm.
Do you suspect anybody else, any of your guests?
Oh, good Lord, no. Most of them have a lot more than I do.
Did you know Norman King in the States, or did you meet him here?
Are you telling me suspect Norman?
I asked when you met him.
Why?
I wondered if you knew him well enough to know he has a record as a forger.
I don't believe it.
Checks. He signed the name of another widow. A copy of the record is being mailed to me.
I don't care. Doesn't make any difference. Norman didn't steal my jewelry. He wouldn't do that to me.
I wonder how many times the other widow said that.
You don't understand me. Norman and I are the same kind of people. You don't think I married a 70-year-old Texan for love, do you? Well, Norman's made up his mind what he wants out of life, too. He's talked about it. He doesn't care how he gets it, but he wouldn't take it from me.
Sure. Well, I wanted to meet you, Mrs. Scott, and I have. Norman King checked into the Dorchester yesterday. He checked out today, and now Scotland Yard can't find him. If you hear from him, maybe you'd better let us know. Johnny Dollar.
Inspector Saylor.
Oh, hello. I'm sorry I took so long to answer. I just got up to my room.
Yes. I spoke to the clerk at the desk. He thought you might be going up now to ring. You saw Mrs. Scott?
Yes, I didn't learn much, but I don't think she's mixed up in it.
No. Well, perhaps I have some news for you.
What's that?
I just received a report of a killing in Limehouse. The constable described a piece of jewelry found at the scene, and it corresponds quite closely to the description of Mrs. Scott's emerald brooch.
Oh? Who was killed?
No identification yet. A man. I'm driving over. I wondered if you'd like me to pick you up.
Yes, I would. I'll be waiting in front of my hotel.
We will return you to the second act of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, in just a moment. What is the secret of Dr. Walter? Sorry, we don't have the answer, but we know where it can be found. Tomorrow night, over most of these same CBS stations, with a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. The unique theater of thrills called Suspense looks into the eerie matter of Dr. Walter's private life. Another thrilling CBS suspense drama tomorrow night. And now with our star, Edmund O'Brien, we return you to the second act of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar.
By the time we got to the dismal Coldwater flat near the Thames, the inevitable crowd had gathered in the street. The body was one flight up in a grubby room that showed plenty of signs that a struggle had taken place. The man obviously had been killed by a blow on the back of the head. He'd been identified by the landlady as George Kenzie, the renter of the room.
It was a bootblack who discovered the body. Said this George Kenzie owed him some money and wouldn't pay. He came up here tonight and found him dead. I found the brooch myself just under the chair there, sir.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Constable.
Right, sir. I'll be outside. Here now, you people that don't belong here, don't crowd the corridor. Move along now. Come along, move along.
Is there any doubt in your mind, Mr. Dollars, that this is Mrs. Scott's brooch?
None at all. Look, the jeweler's mark on the back.
Well, then, we've made some progress. I hardly think we'd be so fortunate as to find the four remaining pieces here.
No. Offhand, it looks like there was trouble over dividing the loot, and the winner took the rest, don't you think?
Quite possibly. Norman Keaton?
I'd feel better if he was found.
So would I. Matter of fact, I wish you'd keep your American criminals in America. You've quite enough to keep us busy without them.
Get your bloody hands off me.
Hello.
I haven't done nothing. I've come to Mr. Kenzie and fixed me out as we will, and I don't need no help from nobody.
Not half you don't. Miss Gloria Stokes, Inspector. She said she'd come to pay a visit to Mr. Kenzie, but she made off the other way when she heard the news.
Well, come in, Miss Stokes.
I will not. Not with him lying there like that.
Very well. Constable, ask Miss Stokes if she'll please accompany you to the yard. Mr. Dollar and I will see her there.
We will return to Johnny Dollar in just a little bit.
Yeah, good old Bob was referring to some noises he heard underneath one of the programs. And what happens is a lot of times with these old recordings, especially if they were on reel-to-reel originally, they old programs from other slightly off track can be heard underneath, and that may be what he was hearing. I personally have learned to try and ignore those other parts just because I don't want it to take away from the show I'm listening to. But that is a reality because I have had many, many old radio programs on reel-to-reel. And if they're just slightly off track, and they can be reel-to-reel to reel-to-reel, it can create these noises that are underneath.
It's fascinating. Who knew? Dave knew. That's who. Yep. Oh, we lost him. Now Dave will return shortly as we prepare to wrap up the Hatchet House theft matter, but that'll be in just a little bit. You know, it's a birthday of someone very, very special to us here at Erie House, and I got a little something before we can get Dave back in here. Here we go.
Newspapers are just as good an advertising medium as radio.
Sure, driving home at night, you can enjoy your newspaper as it lies there on the seat. And there's another good thing about newspapers. You can read them while you're rushing to get ready for work in the morning, right?
Who listens to radio? That go where you go medium called radio. That's with you every night through the long commuter fight. And in the morning with your toast and mama lady-o. Who listens to radio? No matter if it's summer, winter, spring or fall. Who listens to radio? Only 150 million. 150 million people.
Yeah, one of those crazy Stan Freeberg promo announcements for radio.
I know who listens to radio. We do. Here on Erie House Radio. Every weekend.
CW does, and good old Bob does, and Bear the Ghoul does. Fogsbane does. Charlie O'Leary
does.
So many more.
Many, many more. And yet we still have time to wrap up this and maybe have a little bit more time with Stan the Man Freeberg there.
That sounds like a winning recipe as we continue with the Hatchet House Theft Matter from Johnny Dollar.
I suppose it's understood that when you're with Scotland Yard, you do as Scotland Yard does. We didn't search the place, but we learned it was empty of any more jewelry after a crew of technical men collected every possible bit of physical evidence in the room and started it towards the yard's various laboratories. The results of their meticulous tests, comparisons, and examination fell into place later. We asked a few questions there without getting anything and then went back to the inspector's office where Glory Stokes waited for us.
I trust we haven't kept you waiting too long. This is Mr. Dollar, American investigator.
How do you do?
What would he be investigating that would concern me?
We'll explain the whole thing to you, Miss Stokes.
It ain't Miss Stokes. If something tells me, I'm going to wish it was.
You're married?
I am. That's why I was going to George Kinsey. I haven't seen me Abby for 3 days. And I was going to ask George if he knew where the rata was.
What's your husband's name?
Leonard Stokes.
You haven't seen him in 3 days.
That's right.
Couldn't he give you any idea where he was going?
No, why should he? I don't care where he goes, and he knows it.
But you said you were looking for him.
I was. If he's going to desert his poor wife, she's got a right to know, hasn't she?
Yes, I suppose she has.
I take it he spent quite a lot of time with his George Kinsey.
Too much, if you ask me. George was no good. He was a thief. I knew he'd end up dead like this. And if I told Leonard once, I told him 100 that he'd get into trouble if he comes with him. He is in trouble. Ain't he in trouble?
We aren't sure yet, Mrs. Stokes.
What kind of trouble?
Some jewelry was stolen from a woman in Seven Oaks.
Jewels? Oh,
One of the pieces was found in George Kenzie's room. There's still almost $100,000 worth missing.
More than 30,000 pounds, Mrs. Stokes.
30,000? George did that?
Looks like it.
There's a possibility that your husband was involved also.
Leonard? Don't make me laugh. He wouldn't have the brains.
The next morning, armed with pictures of both Stokes and the dead man, Inspector Sailors and I drove back to Seven Oaks. He dropped me at Hatchet House and went on to cover the village himself. Mrs. Scott received me in the library.
Good morning, Mr. Dollar.
Mrs. Scott, you must have left London early this morning.
Yes, I did. Have you made any progress?
Some, yes. Have you heard anything?
I was very unhappy after you left last night.
Why? Did you suddenly get lonesome for your jewels?
I think you know why. I made a confession to you. I let you see what I really am. I never do that.
It's all in confidence. Forget it.
I've been trying to. I got a radiogram from Norman King. It arrived here late yesterday afternoon.
Did you notify Scotland Yard?
No. I know you asked me to, but I didn't think it was necessary. He's on his way back to New York. He wouldn't do that with stolen jewelry, would he?
It would be stupid, but I'll want the name of the ship.
I'll give it to you. He inferred that he knew his record would come to light because of the theft and that he'd feel better leaving England before he was asked to leave. He's a stupid, irresponsible dunce.
Yeah. I have some photographs I want you to look at. Here, I'll spread them out on the table.
Who are they?
Pictures of this man may not be quite lifelike because he was dead when they were taken.
Who is he?
His name is George Kinsey. He was found beaten to death last night. Your emerald brooch was on the floor near him, so we're assuming he was killed because of your jewelry. You ever seen this man around here?
No, not that I remember.
Well, I want you to remember one way or the other. It's possible that this man just received the stolen property from someone else, but if we can find somebody in the house or in the village who recognizes him, then we'll feel sure that he actually was the thief, or one of them anyway.
I'm trying to be sure.
What about the other one?
I don't think I've seen either of them.
And if you'll leave the room, I'd like to talk to your servants.
You're going out of your way to be nasty. You thoroughly despise me, don't you?
No. What I dislike is the fact that the physical part of you wasn't matched up with some mental apparatus that deserved it.
Why?
You asked me a personal question, Mrs. Scott. I want you to look at the photographs and think. It's important that we find out if you have ever seen either of these men in Seven Oaks.
Which one is deceased, sir?
This one.
How large was he?
A little under 6 feet. Miss Hankey?
I don't like looking at them, sir. I don't think I've seen either one of them, though.
There's something about this one, sir.
George Kenzie?
Was he plump?
No, I don't think you'd say plump. He was heavy, stocky.
There's something about him, sir. Can't put my finger quite on it, but there's something.
Could he have made deliveries here?
Who brought the luggage, Millie?
Oh, I don't think it was him. Or this one either. They had their own lorry with a sign on it. Have you forgot?
I'm sure of it, sir. There's something about this one, but I can't remember what.
Well, thanks very much, both of you. If you do remember something, please notify Scotland Yard. In the village, Inspector Sailors had found a few people who thought they recognized George Kenzie and two who were positive. None of them had recognized Leonard Stokes. So by the time we had left Sevenoaks, we were fairly sure that Kenzie had been actively involved. But since he was dead, being sure didn't mean any progress. Nothing further developed that day, although in London a stream of suspects was questioned. The next morning, the situation hadn't changed, but I began to feel that in the face of the movement of Scotland Yard, a criminal would have to have more than brains and more than luck to escape. At 2 that afternoon, a report was phoned in that a man, answering the description of Leonard Stokes, had been seen boarding a train in Waterloo Station and followed to his compartment. Another call delayed the train so that Inspector Sailors and I were able to get aboard.
Here we are. If you don't mind, Stroller.
It's your island, Inspector.
Yes, thank you. Scotland Yard.
What?
Are you Leonard Stokes?
Am I? No, I'm not.
Who are you then, sir?
Well, I don't see how you have a right to go.
You must have identification. Let me see it, please.
All right. I'm Leonard Stokes. Who's he?
An American, Mr. Dollar, sent here to recover Mrs. Scott's stolen property.
You know where it is, Stokes?
Answer him.
It's all right. All right, I know when I'm beat. Yes, I know where it is. But I didn't kill George.
How did you know he was dead, Mr. Stokes?
Well, I tried to telephone him. That's how I found out.
He was killed because of the jewelry, wasn't he, Stokes?
I don't know. But I know why he was killed.
When was the last time you saw him, Mr. Stokes?
Tuesday night.
You went to Sevenoaks?
I went to Sevenoaks, yes. Look, I'm willing to cooperate. Inspector, I'll tell you my part of it.
Well, that will make it a great deal less difficult for all of us.
Yes, sir. Well, he asked me to go to Sevenoaks with him. I didn't know what he was up to. I thought we was just going for a little drive.
Out of 5 pieces missing, Stokes, we found 1 in Kenzie's room. Now, if you know where the rest of them are, you must have known what he was up to.
If I had, I wouldn't have gone. That's the truth. Before I knew it, he stopped off at this hatchet house and told me to wait in the motor.
He must have explained why he stopped.
Well, he said he had a friend to see, a gardener.
Gardener at Hatchet House?
That's what he told me. He came back in a while and then we drove off.
And you still didn't know what was happening?
No.
When did you?
When it was too late. On the road back to London, he told me. He told me whether I knew it or not, I'd just stolen some jewels. Well, I thought he was joking. Then he showed them to me and he says, "Who's going to believe you, Len boy, when you say you didn't know nothing about it?" Oh, what could I do?
What did you do?
I'll go back to London.
Why was there only 1 piece of jewelry in Kenzie's room?
Well, that's all he took. Said he wanted to give it to a chum.
And you took care of the rest of it?
Well, I was afraid to do anything else, sir. He kept telling me I was complicated in it.
Stokes' innocence, as far as the robbery was concerned, became a little embarrassing even to him by the time we got him off the train and back to Scotland Yard. But his denial of any knowledge of Kenzie's murder was borne out, A, by an alibi that proved him innocent, and B, the result of one of the laboratory tests mentioned earlier. Traces of lip rouge found on the dead man's clothing pointed the way to the murderer.
Mrs. Scott is resting in her room and left orders not to be disturbed.
We won't disturb her, Garrett. Is Miss Hankey here?
She's in the pantry, sir.
Could you show us?
This way, please.
Thank you, Garrett.
Oh, Mr. Dollar.
This is Inspector Sailors from Scotland Yard, Miss Hankey.
Miss Hankey.
How do you do? You've come after me, haven't you?
Yes, I think we have.
I don't mind. I don't care about anything now.
You did recognize the photographs of George Kenzie, didn't you?
Recognize him? Yes, I suppose so. I remembered the man I fell in love with. I told you I was going to marry, didn't I, Mr. Dollar?
You met him in Seven Oaks?
Yes. He told me he lived in London. And I felt like a child. I'd never gotten to know anyone who lived in London. When you're born in Penrith, you never do. He was so nice. He could talk so I could listen all night.
Did he question you concerning Mrs. Scott?
He took me to London. And he told me he wanted to marry me. And I believed him.
Millie, we're sorry.
I wanted a husband the same as every girl. But he was lying. He knew I was a servant. And he found out about things.
Then, inadvertently, you told him about the entertainment Tuesday night.
The party? He said it was going to come. I left the rear door unlocked because I was going to give him some refreshments. I thought he hadn't come. But he had. He lied to me. That's why I killed him.
You went to London last night?
Yes. He told me to leave London. He told me to go back to Penrith. Then I knew that he'd lied to me and that he'd stolen the jewelry. He called me a stupid country girl. And that's when I hit him. I hit him and hit him. Because it was true. That's all I am. A servant. And I'll never be anything else.
Expense account item 2, miscellaneous, $317.75. Item 3, same as item 1, transportation back to Hartford. Expense account total, $1,182.75. Remarks? The jewelry was recovered, but in spite of its value, that didn't seem too important. The importance, as I saw it, lay in the complete reversal of values. Mildred Hankey, who only wanted goodness, had found badness. And Marcella Scott? Marcella Scott left for Capri the following day. It was truly Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, stars Edmund O'Brien in the title role and is written by Gil Dowd with music by Eddie Dunstetter. Edmund O'Brien can soon be seen in the Paramount Pictures production, Warpath. Featured in tonight's cast were John McIntyre, Ben Wright, Tudor Owen, Jeanette Nolan, and Virginia Gregg. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, is transcribed in Hollywood by Jaime Del Valle. This is Dan Coverley inviting you to join us next week at this time when Edmund O'Brien returns as...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Tonight's the last Bing Crosby show of the season on CBS. What's more, Ken Murray, his pretty blonde songbird, Laurie Anders, and folk singer Burl Ives are all on hand to help the groaner ring down the curtain. Stay tuned for the Bing Crosby Show next on most of these same CBS stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That wraps up.
$20.
Yeah, so there's our hatchet weekend. You know, Dave, we talked about Lizzie Borden quite a bit yesterday, but there was another historical murderess by the name of, well, and I've heard her name expressed two ways. One is Hatchet Molly, which is the way I first heard the name. Which is where I think the rock band Molly Hatchet got their name. But I'm reading an article that calls her Hatchet Molly that dates back that dates back to the Civil War. In 1864, a Confederate soldier went missing from his unit just outside Cold Harbor, Virginia. He was later found in a local boarding house, his body on the bed and his head on the floor. Nice. Witnesses said they seen him in the company of a beautiful young woman just hours before his headless body was found. Later in 1879, in the small harbor town of Beaufort, South Carolina, sailors from the ships that visited the port were told stories about a mysterious woman outside of town whose business was to deal in the pleasures of the flesh. So basically, she was a woman of ill repute. They were all warned by their captains to stay away from her. Many of them did. One fateful night, a soldier from a visiting steamship, lonely from months at sea, decided to pay Molly a visit. The next morning, his headless body was found lying in an alley behind the local saloon.
I'm starting to see a pattern here.
Yeah, she must have been really attractive because these guys really lost their heads over her.
I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Whoa! Ah!
In another incident, five headless bodies were found before Molly disappeared from town in 1881. And so on and so on. It said that she possessed such striking beauty as well as a body no man could resist, that she had no trouble luring men to her parlor despite the rumors that circulated about her. Now, I don't know, because they're talking about the 1800s. I believe the Hatchet Molly legend goes back to the 17th century, if I'm not mistaken. So I do not know. If you know more, you can give us a call. Yeah, sounds like a case for Carl Golshak. Take a look at it, Carl, baby.
Yep, she's still alive today, luring men to their headless deaths.
Yes.
But, you know, it's their own fault. Because, yes. You know, when they first got there, she said heads or tails, you know.
Oh, jeez. They all seem to make the wrong choice. Oh,
yep.
My.
Hey,
we do have
a birthday to celebrate today, Dale.
It is Mr. Freeberg.
Stan the Man Freeberg, actually one of my early influences. I got all his early records and things like that. And this was one of my early comedy influences of the things that I love to listen to and to try and do myself at times. So. But we have a bit here early from 1953 that we're going to share. Then after that, I have a little bit of information about that particular recording. So
okay, let's get it.
Okay, I'll do it. I got it right here.
Okay, cool.
The legend you are about to hear is true. Only the needle should be changed to protect the record.
This is the countryside. My name is St. George. I'm a knight. Saturday, July 10th, 8:05 p.m. I was working out of the castle on the night watch when a call came in from the chief. A dragon had been devouring maidens. Homicide. My job. Slay him. Call me, Chief.
Yeah, it's the dragon again, devouring maidens. The king's daughter may be next.
Mm-hmm. You got a lead?
Nothing much to go on. Say, did you take that .45 automatic into the lab to have him check on it?
Yeah. You were right.
I was right?
Yeah. It was a gun. 8:22 p.m. I talked to one of the maidens who had almost been devoured. Could I talk to you, ma'am?
Who are you?
I'm St. George, ma'am. Homicide, ma'am. I want to ask you a few questions, ma'am. I understand you're almost devoured by the man. Is that right, dragon?
It was terrible. He breathed fire on me. He banged me already.
How can I be sure of that, ma'am?
Believe me, I got it straight from the dragon's mouth.
11:45 p.m. I rode over the King's Highway. I saw a man. Stopped to talk to him. Pardon me, sir. Could I talk to you for just a minute, sir?
Sure, I don't mind.
What do you do for a living?
I'm a knave.
Didn't they pick you up on a 903 last year for stealing tarts?
Yeah. So what, do you want to make a federal case out of it?
No, sir. We heard there was a dragon operating in this neighborhood. We just want to know if you've seen him.
Sure, I've seen him.
Mm-hmm. Could you describe him for me?
What's to describe? You see one dragon, you've seen them all.
Would you try and remember, sir, just for the record? We just want to get the facts, sir.
Well, he was, you know, he had orange polka dots.
Yes, sir.
Purple feet, breathing fire and smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And one big bloodshot eye right in the middle of his forehead, and like that.
Notice anything unusual about him?
No, he's just a run-the-mill dragon, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir, you can go now.
Hey, by the way, how are you going to catch him?
I thought you'd never ask. A dragon net. 3.05 p.m. I was riding back into the courtyard to make my report to the lab. Then it happened. It was a dragon.
Hey, I'm the fire-breathing dragon. You must be St. George, right?
Yes, sir.
I see you got one of them new 45 caliber swords.
That's about the size of it.
You slay me.
That's what I wanted to talk to you about.
What do you mean?
I'm taking in a 502. You figure it out.
What's the charge?
Devouring maidens out of season.
Out of season? You never pinned that rap on me. Do you hear me, cop?
Yeah, I hear you. I got you in a 412, too.
A 412? What's a 412?
Overacting. Let's go.
On September the 5th, the dragon was tried and convicted. His fire was put out, and his maiden devouring license revoked. Maiden devouring out of season is punishable by a term of not less than 50 or more than 300 years.
Amazing, amazing.
And this was the first of several Dragnet spoofs that Stan did. Now, Stan wanted to use the original Dragnet opening theme music by Walter Schumann. Capitol Records insisted he get permission from Dragnet star and creator Jack Webb. Being a Freeburg fan, Webb liked the idea, approved the use of the name theme, and allowed Freeburg to actually use the orchestra from the Dragnet series, with Schumann conducting. According to Freeburg, when he approached Webb for the idea of the recording, the actor said, "I was wondering when you'd get around to me, Freeburg." The recording had to be restarted several times because the trombone players were laughing so hard at the jokes, they were unable to play their instruments. Schumann's music was issued on sheet music with a front cover photograph of Freeburg minus the glasses, a humorous close-up with noir lighting as if it were still from Dragnet. And it was when it was issued in 1953, it was number one on both the Billboard and Cash Box record charts. B-side was another Dragnet spoof, Little Blue Riding Hood, based on the fairy tale Little Red Riding Hood, in which the Little Red Riding Hood, voiced by June Foray, is accused of trafficking goodies. The introductory narration claims that only the color has been changed to prevent an investigation, a reference to the Red Scare in the House of Un-American Activities Committee. And Freeberg's character narration begins, "This is the woods," you know, so...
Yep.
What an amazing talent. Of course, this spoof was written by both Stan Freeberg and Dawes Butler and starred Stan Freeberg, Dawes Butler, June Foray, and Hi Everback.
Yep, and way back a long, long time ago when we were just doing Erie House Radio, maybe, I don't know, about 5 years ago, right, Dave? We did a nice, maybe yeah. About 4 years ago, we did a nice show about June Foray.
She did have a small part
in that last piece that they played too. She was the dragon,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, she. No, she was. She was the maiden.
Or the maiden. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But she did a lot of. She also did a lot of radio, and as well as all those Warner Brother cartoons and everything else she could get her voice on. She was out there and doing it.
And doing it.
Yeah, I mean,
very well.
Wasn't it when they said that June Foray is the female version of Mel Blanc, and somebody said no, Mel Blanc is the male version of June Foray, you know? So.
Yeah, because she was just as versatile as he, easily doing so many character voices over the years.
Yes,
you know, I hate to break the news to you, but Erie House is going down.
What?
That's right. Next week,
what?
We're going underwater. It's all submarines next weekend, starting Friday at 8:30. We've got Escape. Now Hear This and Cavalcade of America. That'll be Friday night, 8:30 Eastern, right here on Erie House.
Cool.
Yeah.
I guess I'll be here for that.
I'd like you to be. I would be pretty lonely. Well, maybe not if Garcia and Brown would be here. Only have one of you driving me nuts. No, I'm kidding. Folks, thanks so much for joining us, CW. You stuck with us till the end. You can slip in here, you know. We're going to chat for a little bit. Good night. Drive home safely and good luck in prison.
The castle lights are growing dim.
Oops.
There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Only those in the archive are going to hear the whole thing there.
Whenever that starts, I always look at that timer because I have no idea when the timer is not real to me. So it's just the numbers running. So.
Yep. I should probably trust my computer clock more than anything.
I remember thinking back in my early Stan Freberg, I think that some of my first memories were his Stan Freberg Presents the United States of America. Then I heard his radio programs after that. Of course, I heard some of his songs, as we all did. But then I got a hold of his radio program and all 13 weeks of that, and just what an amazing guy. Did some television. He ended up doing mostly advertising, made a good chunk of money doing that because they didn't restrict you on advertising like they did on television. Television was so restrictive of media. He just really didn't. Every time he tried to do something, somebody threw some kind of a roadblock on it, in his way for something that really wasn't. It was a ridiculous thing they were trying to almost say censor him on. It was just weird.
Yeah, nitpicking. Yep. It happens. Dave, when you turned me on to those early shows of his, Stan Freberg, mm-hmm. If you'll remember, I discovered something I hadn't known. It was a sound I was very familiar with on the Ghoul Show. It was a sound bite he would use. If somebody got injured in one of the movies, he'd play this thing that went, ow, ow, ow. And here it was from the Honey Earthers.
The Honey Earthers, exactly.
So clearly Ron Swede was influenced by Stan Freberg, and he must have got it from one of those records that you mentioned that were made and pressed from his show.
Because what he did several times, they came across something that the Wonderful Wonderful and the Honey Earthers got so much notice that they turned around and went into the recording studio, recorded it, and released it as a recording as well. And Honey Earthers was one of them. Wonderful Wonderful, and I thought they even had a better ending on the record than they did on the radio show. It just because they had a little bit more time to formulate the ending. And it was just absolutely amazing. The first one was funny. Don't get me wrong. But the secondary ending was absolutely hilarious. And where they're out at sea and the ballroom is floating by because of all the bubbles. And it's like a mirage. They think it's a mirage out on the water. And you hear saying this. As Lawrence Buck saying, help, help, wonderful, wonderful.
We're drifting down a sea, wonderfully, to the music of the delightful Lennon sisters.
I think several people use clips from John and Marcia from, I'm talking about the TV horror hosts. As many of the Bill Cosby clips that they used.
Oh, yeah.
But Stan Freberg was a big part of using clips for many of these shows just because they were so outlandish that they just fit right in with whatever people were doing, you know?
Yeah. Yep. Good times. Oh, Dave, I guess, is Gar doing his show live?
I believe Jar's doing his show live. He was with us last night, and He was with us while he was in the room there prepping while we were on. So I'm assuming he's got a brand new live show tonight.
I will try to get over there, although there is puppy wrangling in my future.
Yeah, I hear Mighty Joe down there been busy tonight.
Yes, he has. He's still
he wants you to take cringing. He wants you to take puppy out so he can go upstairs for a while.
Yep. Yes, he does. That's his prime opportunity to visit mommy.
So as we allow him a little bit of mommy time, I think it's time to bring in the one and only Schnozola for everyone to say goodnight with.
Good night. We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Ari, go up, we the thing, and eat cut-tink-a-doo.
Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash.
Oh no. Oh no, there's no more paper. Hey, somebody